Hello, Imperial Valley. Welcome to Let's Talk About It, your weekly wellness radio show brought to you as a public service by Imperial County Behavioral Health. My name is Patricia Arevalo-Caro, and I am your co-host for today's show. If you would like to hear any of our shows in Spanish, please tune in on Wednesday mornings at 8 a.m. on Radio Bilingüe 88.7 to listen to our sister show, Expressate. If you'd like to revisit this show or any of our other shows or share a podcast, we'd love for you to do so. Just visit kxoradio.com and click on the Let's Talk About It and Expressate links on the right side of the page to find a show that interests you. Our radio show calendars, along with information about our various programs and services, are available on our website, which is bhs.imperialcounty.org. If you have any questions or feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Just send us an email at wellnessradio@co.imperial.ca.us. We offer free community service training courses that are open to the public, and we're always happy to welcome new participants. You can call us at 442-265-7442 to find out about our upcoming classes. If you want to stay connected with us on Facebook, Spotify, and Instagram, give us a like, a care, or follow to stay up to date on our wellness resources and our upcoming events. So with that, we have the pleasure of having Annabelle Annie Huber today with us. Annie has been a registered dietitian for over 10 years and a board certified renal nutritionist for over 8 years. And she is also the owner of HLT Nutrition. So welcome, Annie. Thank you so much for being with us today and being on our show. Let's talk about it. Let's dive into our show. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah. Like you mentioned, I've been a registered dietitian for over 10 years. I am a board certified specialist in renal nutrition, which is just a fancy way to say that I'm a specialist in kidney disease. I spent the majority of my career working in a dialysis setting, but about 3.5 years ago, I decided to branch off and start my own business where I now focus on community nutrition. So we specialize in medically tailored meal support services, support services for senior nutrition programs, and then also smaller grant-funded programs where we focus on senior health initiatives.
Wow, that's really cool. That's really cool. So do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, how you became a dietitian? You know, I kind of mentioned how long you've been a dietitian, but what made you kind of want to go into this career?
Yeah, so I was always very active. I, you know, played lots of sports growing up. I always knew that I wanted to maybe go into healthcare, but I'm a little, you know, squirmy when it comes to blood and things like that. So I didn't think that nursing would be a good fit for me, but I still wanted to help people. I'm a big foodie, and I also have an agricultural background. My dad is a farmer, and you know, I grew up going to his fields and eating fresh fruits and veggies and kind of doing all of that. So I thought that nutrition would be a good fit for me because it was still in healthcare. I could still talk about food, and I could use kind of that physical activity that was always kind of my passion growing up and connect all of those things together to help people. So I majored in nutrition at Cal Poly SLO. I did my internship at Cal Poly Pomona. I've been in Southern California ever since then and working here in the Imperial Valley for the majority of those 10 plus years.
Wow. The farming background kind of does help with, you know, being able to choose good fruits and vegetables and things like that, because there is a difference, at least to me, in the taste of something that's grown out of the field and fresh out of the field, as opposed to, you know, something that's been kept in a hothouse or something for, you know, amount of time. So, it does make a difference. And that's kind of what we're going to talk about a little bit later on also. You've been a dietitian for quite some amount of time, and then you branched out and formed or created or founded this agency that you have, HLT Nutrition. So could you tell us a little bit about that and kind of give us some of the contact information for your agency?
Yeah, definitely. So I formed HLT Nutrition. I said I worked in dialysis for a long time, but while I was at dialysis, I consulted on the side in the community nutrition space. So once I decided I kind of wanted to go in a different direction, I decided to focus on the community nutrition space because there is such a need for dietitians in the community where we're not, you see us outside of the hospital, outside of the dialysis center, where seeing a dietitian is truly a choice opposed to something that you have to do because you're in, you know, that situation in the hospital, you know, for example. So I started HLT Nutrition Co. about 3.5 years ago after being approached by a produce company to help with their medically tailored meal program. And from there, I've just grown it. And I paired that with some of the different consulting agencies I had already been working with over the past 10 years. So working with the Adult Daycare Center in Brawley, the Senior Nutrition Program through the Imperial County Area Agency on Aging and so forth. And then we kind of expanded it to do other things like private consulting. So we see people that have private insurance. We do counseling through all of the various organizations that we're paired with. We offer telehealth. We offer in-person. We do all kinds of stuff nutrition-wise. And if you're interested in learning more information, you can visit us at our website, which is www.hltnutritionco.com. You can also get the link to our Instagram there. We post really great recipes. We do grocery store tours. We'll talk about certain food groups and stuff like that. So if you want the latest and weekly information, that's probably the best place to go. And that's HLT_nutrition_co on Instagram. And then you can also call our office at 442-202-3077 if you would like to make an appointment or if you just want to learn a little bit more about our services.
In going over your Facebook, your Instagram, and TikTok, I went through all of them to get some information for the show and also to follow you because your website is very inviting. It's very soothing. The colors to me are very neutral and very, I don't know, I just really liked your website. I like your little artichoke with the flower on there. That is just the cute. And, you know, to find somebody else who likes artichokes like I do, yeah, is kind of unique because, you know, everywhere I go, people are, they like eat Brussels sprouts, which I don't, but they don't like artichokes. So it's different, whatever you feel, you know, whatever your taste is. And so you have other nutritionists, or I shouldn't say nutritionists, other dietitians that are working with you also to provide services, correct?
Yeah. So my team of 16 dietitians, we also have 6 assistants that help us. So we're a pretty big team. Actually, 2 of the dietitians that work for us are my sisters. So it really is kind of a family affair. It's really fun and it's really cool to collaborate with them.
Yeah, I bet. It's like not even going to work when you're going to work.
Right. Yeah.
So nutrition counseling, and nutrition. What exactly, like, if I would call you and say, hey, Annie, I am in need of medical nutrition therapy or counseling, what is the step-by-step that someone would take or how would that look to get them in to either see you by telemedicine or telehealth via the computer or to visit your office and see you face-to-face?
So, step by step, the best way would be just to call our office line. However, on our website, there is a link where you can book direct. And I can make that a little bit more apparent. And also I'll share it on my Instagram. That way it's easier to find. But you would just go on and you can request an appointment. Because if you're a California resident, you do have to have a referral from a physician. So either you going to your doctor and asking for a referral to a dietitian, or if you don't know how to do that, we can reach out to the doctor as well, because it really should be a collaboration with your doctor to make sure that we're addressing the issues that they're treating, with medication and so forth, but we're just treating it a little bit different holistically with diet and those types of intervention, diet, exercise, lifestyle modifications, and so forth. So the process would be reach out to our office through one of our avenues, and then make sure that you are working with your physician to either get a referral, or you could ask us and we can do that for you as well. And then for medical nutrition therapy, if it depends on your insurance, most conditions are covered with commercial insurance. But if you have Medicare, for example, Medicare only covers certain conditions. So type 2 diabetes, chronic kidney disease without being on dialysis. So also, if you're confused about that or just want more information, the best way to figure out what your insurance might cover would just be to call our office, and we can help navigate you through that process.
Okay. And then when you do a one-to-one session, like say I'm able to navigate through all of that, and then I have my first session with you, what questions, or should I have any information ready to go or anything filled out, or what does the one-to-one session look like?
Yeah, so prior to a one-to-one session, we do have you fill out a pretty extensive health and nutrition-related history. This is very similar to, well, I shouldn't say similar. It's similar to a questionnaire that you might get into a doctor in a doctor's office on your first visit, except for it's very specific as to your eating, lifestyle, and exercise habits. So prior to any appointment, we have someone fill out that just so that we can get a better picture of where that person is at right now. And then at the first appointment, we typically go through that questionnaire and clarify any type of question we might have. So let's say that you said you drink coffee 3 times a day. Well, what do you put in that coffee? Is it black? Does it have sugar? What kind of creamer are you using? Just because depending on what your goals are, all of those questions could be relevant to us helping you with your condition. And then each session, an initial session is typically 45 minutes to an hour, and then typically a follow-up session is 30 to 45 minutes, depending on what your condition is and what your needs are, what your literacy is in regards to your health condition, and so forth.
Wow. So, you know, you're not going to give me Brussels sprouts when I don't like Brussels sprouts is the thing. And, you know, this is all tailored for the person, for their health, for their condition. It's tailored to them. It's just like having a dress made for you. It's going to fit your specifications and everything that you need to, and I'm going to say healthier, because, you know, somebody obviously it's going to get nutrition therapy needs to become healthier some way or another. So they're going to become healthier and they're going to become wiser because you're doing education with these folks. Two, you're telling them, you know, what are good foods to eat and things like that, and preparing a plan for them, you know. So,
yeah, it's truly individualized. And, you know, everybody, you can't treat two cases the same. Everybody's pain points are different. Everybody's struggles are different. Even how somebody's body responds to diet interventions is totally different from one person to the next. So it truly is individualized based off of that person's current status and how they respond to the different interventions that we're providing for them. So there's a lot more to nutrition than what we think.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I was going to talk to you about is nutrition myths. Do you have any that you would like to share that are just kind of like, you think, God, where did that ever start? That is just so far off base. Anything that, you know, that people really, really hold dear, or, you know, it's very out there in social media that is just not true.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. I really hate the diet culture. Especially things are circled around ketogenic diets. I truly am not a believer in that. And, you know, just being, even if I were to go to like the park or the supermarket or something like that, and you hear people talk about what diets they're on, it continually comes up different forms of a ketogenic diet. So whether it was the Atkins 20 years ago, or now they're just calling it keto and so forth. I really truly can't wrap my mind around that one as a dietitian, because removing an entire food group from your diet is just not healthy. And then also carbohydrates are your brain's primary source of fuel. So I definitely agree with reducing carbohydrate intake, because in an American diet, we're eating way too much, but there's no need to remove an entire food group from your diet, nor would I recommend it as a professional in the field.
So, having an orange or an apple or a banana or whatever fruit is easily available, as opposed to, I'm not going to mention names, but like a potato chip or I don't want to mention names, but any kind of those kind of snacks,
right.
is so you can have healthy carbohydrates like the ones I mentioned, as opposed to the other less healthy ones that probably are not as good for our system or for any kind of medical conditions, right?
Right, exactly. So we want people choosing carbohydrates that are high in fiber, high in nutrients, not the heavily processed ones. Especially depending on someone's situation, I'm even okay with you completely removing, maybe not completely, but for the most part removing grains, because grains are one of those things that we tend to overeat, and you can get enough fiber, enough carbohydrates from fruits and vegetables. However, grains to completely remove from your diet would be extremely hard for most people. And so just making sure that people are educated in choosing the best grains that have the highest amount of fiber that are going to do the best for your body is what it's all about. So really trying to educate people as much as possible, so that way they're making informed choices. But obviously fruits and vegetables are our number one recommendation most of the time.
And so what are some grains that you might say cut back on or not have as much of?
Yeah, we want you to stay away. And this is, you see it everywhere, but white products. So white bread, white rice, white pasta, grains that don't have a lot of fiber. Also the ones that are heavily processed. So those snack foods like the potato chips and all of the grains that are really heavily salted as well. One thing I learned when I was working at dialysis is how much salt bread has in it, which is like totally crazy. Yes, bread and phosphorus, actually. Bread products are so heavily salted, you would be shocked. It's a lot. So just making sure that you're staying away from excess grains and truly trying to monitor your portion sizes. But if you are going to choose them, choosing the ones that are a little bit higher in fiber. So those brown products, brown rice, whole wheat pasta, whole wheat bread.
So if you wanted to make a meal, what would a good, healthy, nutritional meal look like as far as the amount of grams of carbs, grams of fiber, grams of, whatever that's in your meal? What's a good balance?
So typically what we as dietitians tell you is that half of your plate should be fruits and vegetables and the high fiber fruits and vegetables. So fruits with skin, uncooked vegetables, something as simple as like a salad. The other half of your plate should be broken up into half. So half of that should be protein and the other half should be carb. And again, if you're having something, a vegetable that has quite a bit of carb in it, sweet potato or something like that, then there's no need to have that grain. But if you are going to choose a grain, it should be no more than a fourth of your plate. Same with the protein.
So that's a good rule of thumb. And you know what? There are plates that are divided that way. Now that you're talking about it, like when you go, not necessarily out to eat, but like if you have a party or something, there's plates that have a half and a quarter and a quarter.
Yeah.
So that's actually a good way to follow. I mean, a good rule of thumb to follow, that just think of the plate like that and you should be okay.
Yeah, definitely. For sure. And to keep in mind also a normal size plate. Sometimes they give you those ginormous plates that are, we want to make sure that we're taking into account just like your standard average size plate as well.
Yeah. And so, we're talking about healthy eating. We're talking about snacks and stuff like that. So who do you see? What generation do you see struggling the most with trying to get good, nutritious food? Do you see young kids? Because I see a lot of young kids eating pretty healthy, but I see a lot of young kids not eating so healthy too. And the same thing for older adults. So who do you think as more of a good balancer?
You know, I work mostly with seniors. So I, to be honest, I would say the seniors that I see, they have pretty great eating habits. If anything, they just use like too much sodium. That's pretty common, but they eat their vegetables. They like their protein. They're pretty good. The kids, some of the things I see, you know, I do a lot of presentations at the schools and stuff. Some of the items they say they eat regularly, it's pretty bad. You know, I feel like kids are really in the Starbucks era, and I have nothing against Starbucks, but they're also not choosing the plain green tea either, you know? And,
yeah.
And we live in a life where venti, you know, let's get the venti for 25 cents more, but that's, you know, those are empty calories, and especially for a child that's growing and needs the fiber, needs that, those healthy things. Having a drink that has, you know, 1,000, I'm just making that up, but 1,000 grams of sugar in it is going to cause your blood sugar to spike and going to cause you to crash, which doesn't promote a healthy learning environment, or, you know, it's not really doing anything good for your body. So yeah, I would be more worried about the kids than the adults. And maybe those are just the adults that I see, but I think they eat pretty good minus over seasoning most of their food.
Yeah. And, you know, when you stop and think is that, you know, adults, even me, I mean, I grew up in a different era and, you know, where fast food was available. I'm not going to say it wasn't, but it wasn't as readily available as it is now. Even in schools, I remember seeing, I'm not going to say 100% healthy, but, you know, there were healthier options. How's that? Were available. We see a lot of oranges and things like that.
So. Yeah, less convenience food items as well. I mean, you know, and not that there some convenience food items they do have a place and they can be healthy, but a lot of them are, there's so many preservatives in them. You know, so again, you know, those items weren't available 20, 30 years ago. Not all, I mean, some of them, you know, there was always the Lunchable, there was always stuff like that. But it's so very convenience focused these days. And that's what a lot of our kids are eating.
Yeah. And I see it because, you know, kids are, you know, mom, dad picks them up after school. They have to get them to practice. They have to get something.
Yes.
And, you know, I know sometimes it may be empty nutrition, but they have to get them something to at least make their stomachs feel full. And so it's healthy, it's convenient, and, you know, you can buy a pizza for $5 and feed your family, you know, so, you know, when you got kids on the run and you've got stuff to do, it's, I can see it. But I guess what I'm hearing you say is it's okay every once in a while, but not every day.
Yeah, and just be selective with the convenience foods that you're choosing. So really learning how to read the food label. So, you know, one great example is spaghetti sauce, for example. Not all spaghetti sauces are created equal. There are some that have 25 grams of sugar per serving, and there's others that have 2. So, you know, choosing the one that has 2 grams of sugar per serving opposed to 25 grams of sugar per serving is an easy fix. But still choosing a convenience item is that's going to get you from point A to point B, make sure that you're able to feed your kids with your busy schedule. But, you know, so a lot of what we do as dietitians is teaching people how to read those labels and how to make the best choices while still choosing foods that fit within their, you know, availability to cook and so forth.
Yeah, and it's really important to read the labels because like you just mentioned earlier, white bread has a lot of sodium. I read labels and honestly, I must have just bypassed that part of it because I don't really buy a lot of white bread. But again, I don't want to knock white bread. There's nothing wrong with white bread. I just prefer other breads. I read those labels, but yeah, it's a shocker to have that much, you know, have a lot of sodium. But I guess that's what makes it taste good, maybe? That's what, you know, attracts people.
Yeah, for sure.
We've got just a few seconds left in this segment, so we're going to go ahead and end right there instead of starting something off, because the next one that we want to talk about is water consumption. So with that said, we will take a brief commercial break, and we will be back with Annabelle Huber from HLT Nutrition in just a few seconds. Welcome back, Imperial Valley. So we have the pleasure today of speaking with Annie Huber from HLT Nutrition. She comes to us with lots of years of experience as a dietitian and as a renal dietitian, and sharing a little bit of her knowledge, or as much as we can compact of her knowledge in the time that we have today with her. The first segment, you know, we were talking about healthy eating, healthy habits, and things like that. So this section, or this segment, we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, drinking water and, you know, things that you can do to kind of make yourself feel a little bit better, and talk a little bit about comfort foods and things like that. So the first thing that we want to talk about is water. What is the rule of thumb? How much should we be drinking? How do we do that? How do we figure it out?
Yeah. So typically I recommend 1 milliliter per kilo of body weight. So an easy way to do that is just to take your body weight and cut it in half, and that is the bare minimum of water that you should be drinking per day. Now that's water. We're not talking soda. We're not talking coffee. We're talking just straight water. So we live in the desert though, and that's one thing to keep in mind. It's really hot outside. On hotter days, we definitely should be consuming a little bit more water than that. If you're someone that is super active, so you're going to the gym every day, you definitely need to add on more water than just half of your body weight. And then also, if you're somebody who works outside or has a very labor-intensive job, you also need to add more water. So again, drinking just half of your body weight in water is the very bare minimum. And again, we're talking just water, not other beverages.
Okay. So If I'm outside and, you know, even just walking from your car, you know, from your office to your car, or walking from in the parking lot to get to a store, you can, you know, perspire a little bit. And, or if you're one of those people who like to ride your bike, or like when I'm driving to work, I see people out there jogging and doing stuff. So they're excreting more water. They're perspiring a little bit more heavily than just say me who's sitting here in an office. So would you say that it would be safe with, you know, with their doctor's consent or with their doctor's permission to put like electrolytes, in their water to be able to, help themselves with, you know, cramping or whatever else they may, get from, you know, from, perspiring as much?
Yeah, so we definitely can utilize electrolytes. You know, at Costco, they have those little packets, or they have the little electrolyte drops that you could get at Walmart or Bonds or whatnot. But like you mentioned, we really shouldn't be utilizing those unless we are actively sweating, we are actively outside, we are actively perspiring pretty rapidly. Most of us, unless you're on certain medications, like especially blood pressure medications, most of us don't have problems regulating our electrolytes. If you're cramping, you're most likely dehydrated. However, if you're perspiring a lot, then you are losing some of those electrolytes. So in that situation, definitely okay to use some of those electrolyte replacement drops or packages or whatnot. So just keep that in mind. You know, use them only when you are working really hard, not just like day to day.
Yeah, not like me sitting in an office all day. Yeah, I mean, we still perspire when we're sitting, but not to that extent. So, you know, and those are some of the things that we can do to help ourselves. And like Annie said, is that, you know, just make sure that your doctor is okay with it, or that you, you know, you don't take anything that could interact with the medication that you're taking.
Right.
So when we're talking about, you know, if somebody's feeling maybe a little sad, a little down, not clinically depressed, but maybe just having a bad day, you know, it's like, I, you know, I have a project I didn't finish. I came to the office and, you know, my office, my computer didn't work all day, so I couldn't finish my project. And you're just feeling a little sad or a little down. What can somebody do? Is there foods that people can eat, or is there comfort foods, or how would you do that just to kind of help perk you up a little bit and maybe get you out of that little bit of a slump?
Yeah, definitely. So there are foods out there that have clinical properties that will help with both serotonin and dopamine release. That would mainly be complex carbs, so things like in fruits and vegetables, and then the dopamine is related to protein intake. You could also eat foods that are high in omega-3 fatty acids, so things like nuts and seeds and fish and all of those. But that becomes very complicated. We're having a bad day. Do we really want to think about the complex carbs, the proteins, and the omega-3s? Maybe not. So what has the same effect is going to foods that are comforting for us. Offline, we talked a little bit about one of mine. One of mine is my mom's potato salad. You know, she's been making it my entire life. Every time she makes it, it tastes good. It feels good. It kind of brightens my day just a little bit. And if you think about something like potato salad, maybe not the healthiest option out there, but it does have protein because we put eggs in it. It does have complex carbs. It does have veggies. You know, she adds celery and stuff like that to it. So also not the worst choice when you are feeling down. However, we want to make sure that when the comfort food is something that isn't, you know, the most health conscious choice, we're not doing it all the time, but it's totally okay to utilize it to increase, you know, those serotonin levels when we are feeling a little bit blue.
Well, that's good to know. And we all had, well, hopefully we all had, you know, something in our childhood, like you say, your potato salad, mine was grilled cheese, you know, something that makes you feel good, just kind of brings you happy thoughts. You know, and that's kind of what you want to get you out of your slump, you know, to get you thinking of a good memory. So one thing that you had talked about earlier is portion control and things like that. And I hear a lot about people talking about like skipping a meal or meal replacements or, you know, some of the other stuff that's out there. What are your thoughts about that? Is there something that you can do to help your diet but not deprive yourself of adequate nutrients?
Yeah, so I don't like meal skipping. I am a huge supporter of eating smaller, more frequent meals, if you will. So the reason for that is that our metabolism works best when we're fed regularly. Our body goes into fasting after only 2 hours of not eating. So definitely by, you know, someone skipping breakfast, your body's in that fasted state until you eat again. And you're just slowing down your metabolism, which affects everything else, your energy levels and so forth. I'm not a huge supporter of skipping meals. I definitely think by eating smaller, more frequent meals, we're giving ourselves the best chance at having the best energy, the best mental clarity, et cetera. However, with that being said, if you're someone that struggles with overeating or has a hard time, you know, cutting it off at nighttime, then maybe, you know, giving yourself a time frame to eat, you know, the intermittent fasting, I'm sure you've heard of that, would be something that would be effective for you. But I definitely err on the side of caution with it and just encourage you just to set a time at night when you're not going to eat past that hour to help with those late night cravings, and then make sure that you're eating within a reasonable time frame in that morning. So not going too long without a meal.
So say you're an 8-to-5-er, so maybe starting to eat your first morning meal, say 6-ish, because, you know, by the time you get dressed and all that kind of stuff, and maybe stopping at 8 o'clock, that way you have, what, for 10 hours in between your last meal and first meal. So could that be like a...
Yeah, I would say like eating within a 12-hour window, so 6 to 6 or 7 to 7, whatever is the most convenient for you. And again, we want to go with the smaller, more frequent meals. So kind of retraining our brain from having 3 large meals a day to somewhat more of snacks for most of those meals, and eating more heavily in the beginning of your day opposed to late at night, because we're not going to burn through all of those extra calories late at night. And in an American diet, most of us eat the largest meal is typically dinner.
Yeah. So say you had like, I don't know, a couple of eggs in the morning, even if they're hard boiled and, you know, you're eating while you're getting dressed, I don't know. And then maybe midday around 10-ish when you take your break, have like what kind of a snack or would something would you what would you recommend as a mid-morning snack?
Yeah, for mid-morning snacks, I like to recommend things that have good sources of protein in it. So something as simple as a Greek yogurt with some berries, that actually is really good for mental clarity. You're getting protein, you're getting healthy dairy, you're getting the fruit with the fiber in it and lots of nutrients and lots of antioxidants. So like a yogurt with fruit would be a great example. I love the 100 calorie packs of nuts. Those are really high in omega-3 fatty acids. You could even do like a half of a banana with a little bit of peanut butter on it. That would be a great snack. So just something simple, that has protein, complex carbs, and some kind of nutrient, you know, especially going with something like a fruit that's very nutrient dense.
And then like a mid-afternoon snack, kind of the same kind of things that you would have. Because, you know, a lot of us get those 3 o'clock in the afternoon slumps.
Yeah.
So yeah. Something to kind of help bring you out of it, you know, or wake you up.
Yeah, definitely. Just something that's really nutrient dense. So going with the fruit with a little bit of protein. And I love the plant-based proteins because most of them are non-perishable or have a longer shelf life than, you know, like a chicken breast, for example. So just going with something that's quick and easy, but has a good amount of protein in it and a good amount of complex carbs. And then also has those nutrients that are going to help perk you up.
But one thing we kind of touched on, but we didn't really touch on is caffeine. How does caffeine affect, and is there a good way to, well, not a good way, but is there a way, like I've been hearing like protein coffees and things like that. Are those good sources of nutrition?
They're not bad sources of nutrition, but there's definitely better sources of nutrition. Let's say you're someone and you just don't like breakfast. Breakfast is not your thing. You just can't do it, but you love having your coffee in the morning. That's a great way to get some protein into your diet. And protein is so important for metabolism, building muscle, balance, all of the things. So definitely if that's you, then that's a great option. However, I always say, you know, it's better to go with something where you can get that fiber, where you can get those complex carbs. And a coffee drink with the protein in it is not going to have that, but there definitely is a place for it. Now, also, I don't want you drinking those coffee drinks with protein in it all day long because too much caffeine is also not great for you, can dehydrate you. It can make you jittery. I know we were talking about mental health earlier. If you're someone that's already nervous, it can, you know, make it worse. It can affect your sleep if you're drinking it too late in the day. So, you know, just keep that in mind. But there definitely is a place for it if you are someone that especially doesn't like breakfast and does drink coffee and wants to, I guess, get more bang for your buck by utilizing some protein in there.
So if you're not a breakfast person, would say something like what is this scoop of whey protein and maybe some almond milk or oat milk or I don't know, cashew milk. I don't know. One of those milks would be a good
Yeah, it would be a great alternative and just utilizing it as a meal replacement. Because again, protein is such an important nutrient. As long as you can commit to getting enough fiber and nutrients in your other meals, then I would be totally fine with someone having a coffee drink with protein in it for breakfast, just simply in order to break the fast and jumpstart your metabolism for the day.
All right. Well, we've learned a lot in these last 15 minutes of nutrition and, you know, how can we help ourselves, especially the water, because that's a really important thing and getting enough electrolytes and things like that, because this valley is a little bit hard on the folks, especially the folks who have jobs that are outside of an office. You do sweat a lot in the valley. I mean, it's 120 in the shade down here. So, you know, people are going to perspire. So with that said, we will take another brief commercial break and we will be right back at you, Imperial County. We'll see you in a bit. Welcome back, Imperial Valley. And today we have the pleasure of speaking with Annabelle Huber of HLT Nutrition. And we've learned some really interesting stuff. So you're going to have to go back and play the whole session all over again so that you can hear all the interesting stuff that Annabelle has shared with us. So our last segment, we're going to talk about healthy food on a budget. If I don't have a lot of money or my food budget is stretched, as many people in Imperial County are, you know, we want to make sure that we can give them ideas or tips or tricks on things that may not cost a lot and are budget friendly and that can help, you know, especially when you're maybe getting towards the end of the month and money is a little bit more scarce and you want to be able to feed your family. And so what are some of the things that the folks can do or buy or?
Yeah. So I always recommend shopping the outside of the grocery store. Items that are not convenience foods are going to be a lot more budget friendly. Yes, it's going to take you a little bit more time to prepare, but if you have one slow day per week, you know, say it's Saturday, you can plan ahead and try and prepare what you can to save yourself from some of those convenience items. Because again, shopping in the middle of the grocery store is going to be a lot more expensive than shopping on the outskirts. One other thing I really like to recommend is something as simple as buying the whole roasted chicken opposed to buying just the chicken breast. And granted, you know, I feel like, you know, in the media and stuff, they're always promoting boneless, skinless chicken breast, et cetera. But there's nothing wrong with a chicken thigh or a chicken drumstick. And it is very budget conscious, and you could use the leftovers for a meal the next day. So like, let's say you made a whole roasted chicken for dinner on Sunday and you had leftover chicken, you could easily make enchiladas or something with the leftover chicken the next day, or put that chicken on salad or put it in a soup and make chicken noodle soup. You know, very simple things that you could do to make your food go a long way. Other things I recommend is trying not to be wasteful with our food. So veggies, for example, for broccoli, most of us throw away the stalk, right? There's no reason to throw away the stalk. One time when I was in San Francisco, actually, I went to this restaurant and it was broccoli stalk sauteed. It was so good. And ever since then, instead of just making, you know, steamed broccoli, I cut up the stalk and I'll put it in a stir fry. So again, just utilizing the whole part of the vegetable or the protein or whatever can save you a lot of money. And then of course, staying away from convenience items because you are paying for the convenience.
Well, those are good tips because like you said, you know, everybody hits the middle of the store and that's where they put all the cookies and all the stuff. And it's, you know, it's marketing, you know, they want to sell. The other thing that I saw on your website, the HLTNutrition.co.
Yeah, HLTNutritionCo.com.
Co.com. Okay. I saw that and on your Instagram page where you had some healthy recipes. And I was looking at some of them and you had like an orange chicken and there's no crust on it. There's no breading. And it looked so delicious and it was a one pan meal, mm-hmm. which if you're working or you've got kids, you've got stuff, the less clean up, the better.
Right.
And can you share a couple of recipes that you'd like that you think are budget friendly or that are, you know, easy to make and maybe even the kids can help? I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely recommend getting your kids involved. When your kids know what they're eating, I feel like they're more likely to try new things. I love that orange chicken meal. Follow us on Instagram because our registered dietitian, Dani Mohammed, she does all of the recipes on there and she takes things that are traditionally not super healthy and turns them into a really healthy, really simple choice. Some other one pan meals, you know, one of my favorites is one pan chicken fajitas. Super easy. You can cut the bell pepper ahead of time. Same with the onion. You throw it all on a pan. You season it with, you know, a tiny bit of salt, pepper. I like to use a lot of garlic powder. You can even use fresh garlic. And depending on how spicy your kids like it, just a little bit of chili powder. You toss it all in with a tiny bit of olive oil and bake for about 30 minutes and it's done. You can serve it with a corn tortilla or a little bit of rice. And you know, especially if you're choosing brown rice or a corn tortilla, those are both considered whole grains and you have your complex carbs, your healthy protein, and your nutrient dense veggies with the bell peppers. That's definitely one of my favorites. I'm a busy mom, and so I also love to utilize the crock pot. You can ask my kids, I am the crock pot queen. One of my very favorite meals is just I call it crock pot pulled chicken. And it's essentially just whatever chicken I have on hand, and I put it in the crock pot and just cook it on low with a little bit of water and seasonings. And then when I take it out, we just put a little bit of barbecue sauce on it and serve it on some kind of roll. I make my own sourdough bread, but you know, whatever your favorite type of, you know, they even have whole wheat rolls out there, and it's a very quick and simple dinner. And my kids love that one. So that's another one that I love, and it's pretty cost effective too. You could even throw the whole roasted chicken in there if you really wanted to. So.
Wow. And I saw one, and I'm a big chia fan person. I love chia seeds on my oatmeal with my hemp hearts and yogurt and stuff like that. And don't forget the cinnamon. And there was a recipe on there for the chia seeds, which I thought was really, really, I mean, to me, it's really good. So, and it has cocoa powder in it. I mean, it's a complete meal. It's got chocolate. I'm a chocolate person, so yeah.
Yeah. No, and chocolate, if it's natural chocolate, it's actually really high in antioxidants. So again, by utilizing ingredients correctly, you're actually making a complete and healthy meal. And by pairing it with something like chia seeds that's really high in fiber and also has some protein in it, it's a really great choice and a great way to start your day.
Yeah, and it's a quick, well, it's an overnight thing, and which is nice because it's kind of like that whole meal prep kind of thing where you make things ahead of time and it's ready for you to go and just have it in little containers, and you can take the kids off to school and they can be munching it while they're on their way to school if they want, you know. I mean,
yeah.
We're all busy. So the next thing that I want to talk about is Project Food Box.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us how it came to be and what it is for the folks that are listening that don't know what it is or have never heard of it.
Yeah, so we started working with Project Food Box about 3.5 years ago, again, just kind of as a consultant. We now do all of their nutritional or a big chunk of their nutritional support services. So same thing that we do privately for clients, nutritional counseling, nutritional assessments, chronic disease management. So if you have diabetes, we're helping you with that. And also just pairing that nutrition education with healthy meals and healthy food options. So it's really kind of a two-piece project where they're getting food, but they're also getting the education to help them be successful in managing their health condition for the long term.
And that's super important because you're giving them tools for their toolbox and how to be able to do this. So when they go to the store, they can say, oh, okay, you know, this is a healthier choice or this is a healthier choice if they don't get a food box or whatever. But, and that's really important. I've always been of the philosophy, you teach a person, you teach them for life, you know, you show them for life. And so how does one contact them or how do you get involved or how do you reach out?
Yeah, so in Imperial County, they are serving the CHPIV D-SNP population right now. So you would just go to their website, which I believe is www.projectfoodbox.org, their phone number, and also there's an online submission form that you can fill out to see if you qualify. It depends on your health insurance, but if you contact them, then they can help you navigate that system as well. And that's how you get started.
And so it's super simple. Nobody's making it very difficult for you to get started. Just go onto the CHPIV website and sign up. And
yeah.
Good. Yeah. Okay, great. So we're coming to the end of this segment, and I kind of want to just talk about how we can encourage families to eat healthier and what is like the first change or one small change that they can make to go to the next small change and onward.
Yeah. No, I love that you said small change. I think when we think about health, sometimes it can be so overwhelming that we try and choose too many things to focus on, and then it's just too overwhelming to make any change. So like you said, start with one thing. So what's one thing that I can do today that is going to impact my health? So for me, I can drink more water. I definitely don't drink enough water even as a dietitian. So I have my little jug that I keep next to my desk. And so one goal I could do for myself is I'm going to drink one more glass of water today. That's realistic. It's achievable. We call them SMART goals. They're specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time sensitive. I'm going to do that every single day for 1 month. Let's say you really want to get into exercising, but you do not exercise whatsoever right now. Don't set your goal to run a marathon in a month. Set your goal as I'm going to walk twice this week, and I'm going to do that for a month. Once I hit that 2 times a week goal for an entire month, maybe I'll up it to 3 times a week I'm going to go walking, or maybe I'm going to start trying to do some strength training. So again, starting with one small goal that is realistic for you, and don't compare yourself to what, you know, your sister's doing or your friend. It has to be something that's realistic for you, your lifestyle, your current health status, and everybody's is different.
Yeah. And, you know, you are unique. So you want to be, make these changes unique to you. So yeah. One, if listeners can take away one thing and do one thing for themselves and, you know, maybe introduce a healthy food, what would be a healthy food that they could introduce slowly and to help build on?
I'm a very big supporter of just vegetables. It doesn't matter what vegetable it is. Ideally, I'd like you to stay away from, you know, too many potatoes and stuff like that. But if you can choose a high fiber vegetable, broccoli, asparagus, bell peppers, even a zucchini, I know that has carbs, but it has quite a bit of fiber because we typically eat it with the skin. Try and choose a high fiber vegetable and make, if you're not someone that eats vegetables, you need to be adding that twice a day to your diet. Because those high fiber vegetables, again, are giving you fiber. They're giving you complex carbohydrates. They're good for your heart. They're good for your blood sugar. They're good for your weight. They make us feel full. They have the insoluble and soluble fiber, so it's good for your GI system. So realistically, if you can just choose a vegetable or, you know, group of vegetables that you like and try and add it in at least twice a day, especially if you're not eating them now, that would be my number one recommendation.
Great. All right. Well, we are coming to the end of our show, and we want to make sure that Annie can give you her contact information again before we end. So, Annie, could we get your contact info?
Yeah. So you can contact us on our website. It's www.hltnutritionco.com. You can also find us on Instagram at HLT_nutrition_co. That's the best place to find us if you're just looking for recipe advice, advice on products, so which bread to choose, which pasta sauce to choose, grocery store tours and stuff like that. Or if you want to make an appointment for a one-on-one consultation or even a group nutrition consultation, you can call us at 442-202-3077.
Okay, great. So we have your contact information, and we really thank you for being here today with us and taking time and talking about wellness and how it relates to your body and your mental health. And because if your body feels better, your mind feels better, and your body is your temple, and, you know, you've got a really strong temple, and make yourself feel good and be able to carry on and meet any challenge that meets you for the day. So with that said, my name is Patricia Arevalo-Caro, and like I said, we had Annie Huber today. If you have any questions or want to find out about any of our shows or any of our information of our trainings, you can contact us at 442-265-7442. If you'd like to schedule an appointment, you can call us at 1-800-817-5292 or 442-265-1525. Thank you, Imperial Valley, and we'll meet up with you next week.